step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots-on-the-ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.
Welcome back to the show where we go inside the career journeys and brand stories of our guests. Today we have someone who is completely plugged in. It's Rich Moore. He is ChargePoint's VP of Fleet Solutions. Rich, thanks so much for joining us. And as I understand it, you're not even that far away from me right now. You're sitting in Nashville today.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Yeah, sitting up in Nashville. Nice and chilly up here this afternoon, but excited to be up in Nashville to see a couple customers and one of our newest partners I'm sure we'll get to talk about on the interview today.
You know, I come from Boston. They didn't tell me when I moved down here about 3 years ago that it gets pretty cold here in the winter. You'd be surprised. I'm sure when you woke up in Nashville this morning, you're like, I need a coat.
Yeah, no doubt. It was. I'm from Connecticut originally, so you know, kind of defected from the cold, you know, almost 20 years ago, like you. So it's a ton of fun, but it does get a little chilly. You're just waiting for the winter to be over.
Well, wise man. Well, how about this? Give us a little elevator pitch on what ChargePoint is, just for the uninitiated who've never heard of you.
Yeah, so ChargePoint is one of the oldest EV fueling companies in the United States. The company's been around for about 13 years. We are a hardware and a software company that provides networked charging solutions across North America and Europe. The company has roughly 200,000 ports between North America and Europe, between our own and people that come into our network. You know, we provide fueling and convenience for customers to be able to get where they're going. So the company's goal is really around delivering, you know, a lower cost of delivering goods and service, whether that's people's products or, you know, anything along the line of transportation. That's what we do.
Now, this is a relatively new space, but as I understand it, you've done more than 105 million vehicle charges already. So ChargePoint already very seasoned in this fast emerging space that's just going to explode during this decade.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this was one of the early adopter companies, and I started here just about a year ago now. So it was one of the key decisions that I looked for when I was thinking about making my first career move after 25 years in my old company. So, and really my decision was really around what I saw from ChargePoint from a development area on not only their software, on what they do to keep chargers connected and keep people connected, but also around what they've done from advancing hardware and around some of the acquisitions that they've done in Europe and how they're looking to expand this marketplace. So it was a really important criteria for me in determining like why I want to leave a company after 25 years and jump into a, you know, essentially a startup, which is something that I wasn't familiar with coming into this year.
No, it's cool. You know, I was looking in your background, and let's get to that point in the show. We'll find out where you come from and your perspective, because you spent like over 25 years with Ryder System. And people out there, it's system, not systems. And Ryder people will correct if you put systems on there. But before we get to how you ended up there for 25 years, when you're like 16 and scouting colleges, what did you think you would be when you grew up? Was freight, like, do you have freight blood in the family, or how did you end up there?
No, I actually started in nursing school. I was working on the ambulance before I went to college in Connecticut, and I had every intention of going to nursing school and becoming a nurse. And my parents were both in the medical field. My grandparents were both in the medical field, and it was something that I thought I really wanted to do when I grew up. And got into my second year of college and said, you know, this probably isn't for me. This isn't not something I wanted. Something much more interactive. And by luck, I got a job working part-time at Ryder on the rental counter in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I think I was making, I don't know, $8 an hour because I couldn't get off midnights on the ambulance. It was a late shift. It was union. You know, I was low guy on the totem pole. And so I started working part-time and kind of fell in love with it. The business, it was interesting. As soon as I joined Ryder, they had just sold a division of Ryder, our one-way division, which was our traditional yellow truck division. We sold it. So I got to be a part of that kind of acquisition process. So when I came there, it was really exciting being able to kind of break up the two companies and support the breakup of that and to support the new company that had bought that division. So at like a really young age, I got a lot of responsibility kind of right out of the gate at that company. And then it just kept on coming over and over and over. And it was a privilege to spend, you know, my whole career there so far. It was a great experience. That company has done an unbelievable job training people, how to prepare for running a business and be a professional.
Now, you weren't in a startup, I mean, legacy company, but you were with them for a long time, but you're with them during this sort of very transitional and transformational period in freight. And things happened very slowly until maybe about like the mid-2000s in terms of tech. Like, I remember at FedEx Trade Networks, I was still sending people like faxes and everything was still paper doc. And this is like 2005, 2006. So it's been a slow journey, but we are way beyond that now. Now we're in like 2022. But during that 25 years, what did you learn? What did you take with you from Ryder? And what perspective did it give you in this industry that you're bringing to ChargePoint?
So I think what you see in transportation is there's a tendency in the industry to stick with what works, because it's a repeatable process. So I guess this is kind of one of the reasons why I decided to go the path I did after my career at Ryder. So when you look at the transport industry, they're very focused on delivering goods and services and being able to do that cost effectively. That means the right equipment, the right drivers with the right fueling sources, you know, all the things that make a successful transportation company what they are. So putting new technology in that operation is extremely disruptive. And you've seen it over time. This happened during the SER, EGR days when we had regeneration, extremely disruptive to a business. It was a completely new business model. You saw this when we first moved to electronic braking, to Jake brakes on trucks. You saw this when we went to automatic transmission on vehicles. Everyone, you can almost map out those milestones in transportation and say, this was really disruptive. And the industry does push back on change a lot, especially in transportation, because first off, it's very hard to do what those teams do. Transportation is extremely tough. It's probably one of the hardest industries to be able to be successful over a long period of time. So when you inject change in that, it's very hard for people to adopt and put that into their normal operation. So those are all the things that I saw over a 25-year career, that the industry does accept the change, but it takes a while to prove that it's going to work in their operation. So it was interesting when I was looking at, you know, moving into a completely new industry, you know, I was looking at who was going to have that industry's best interest in mind, between integration, not disrupting their business, you know, all the things that they need to be successful. And that was one of the moments that I said, you know, I can really help in this area because I love the industry, and two, I really understand what it is to not disrupt that business to make sure they're successful, because their whole job depends on it.
This is a relatively new space. Like we said, it's emerging. The equipment is coming online. Finally, you know, fleets are getting options out there for their electric vehicles to make great use of this. We've already done a pretty good job in the passenger car, especially at companies like Tesla, where you see them on the road. We're hearing all the reports of what's coming out. I know some of my friends at Manifest are there. They sent me some pictures of the EVs on display. Super, super exciting. How big is this space right now, though? And what are fleets? Because this is new. A lot of fleets, they're buying their first EV, right? Or they're thinking about it. It's got to be all curiosity questions right now. What are fleets engaging you about? What do they want to know about EVs?
So I think what they're asking is, you know, how do I be successful in this early? And what I'm telling clients is, you know, one, you have to have buy-in from your local transportation manager, that they understand why you're doing this. Who is driving the decision to move to EV? Is it your customer? Is it your boss? Is it your board? Who's pushing for this? And then the work with the transportation manager on how does this integrate into his or her business and their operation? And can you make it as frictionless as possible? And then how do you measure against the success of putting those vehicles in your fleet? So those are key things that you need to do if you're going to expand this, because it is the same, but it is very different at the same time. So when you look at it from an operations standpoint, it's adding some uncertainty into that transportation manager's daily routine. So you're taking some time from something he or she would normally be doing to put in a new piece of technology. And are you willing to make that bet on that operation? So a lot of the conversations I have with customers are, let's start with the right application for your business. Let's start with the right geography for your business. let's not chase grants and incentives. Let's look at really where is this going to be important to your business and where are you going to get the best learnings from this in your business? Because it might not be the state of California. It might not be the state of Massachusetts. It might be someplace else that you can really get a better understanding of how this works in your business. So that's a lot of the guidance that we're giving customers. We'll help with grants and incentives and infrastructure, and we'll help with the right power charger. We'll help with, you know, getting it in the ground and supporting it. We'll help with integrating your business. But as a business owner and an operator, you need to decide, you know, with us, where is the right place to do this, and how do you start? And we recommend starting, you know, with, you know, as little as one vehicle in some cases, so you can get a feel for the operation. And then I think what you're seeing is you'll quickly start to understand what is the total cost of ownership of this? What is your fuel cost? All the metrics that you get pushed for on a traditional ICE business.
You know, I talk to Matt Schrapp from the Harvard Trucking Association all the time. And one of the things that he's been talking about, and that's a huge sense of urgency around port truckers, are the regulations, that regulatory environment that you have to have these zero emissions vehicles. And what they're screaming is like, well, we need the infrastructure and we need the equipment to be there. Now, from the fleet's perspective in dealing with regulations, what do you tell them? How does ChargePoint help out there? And what are we looking at the expansion of the charging network?
Yeah, so on the regulation side, there's a couple of things that we do. So one, we really help with the reporting to be compliant for the regulation. So whether it's the South Coast Air Quality Management Distance Regulation, or it's, you know, being able to track the amount of miles your vehicles are run so you can qualify for a grant, or being able to file make-ready incentives at the federal or state level, we help with all that to try and take that off their plate. The other thing is understanding of, you know, how do you qualify for those incentives, or how do you then physically report that information back to the local, state, or federal agency? So we'll help with all that. So we have a couple softwares that we use on our back end that'll do a lot of that reporting for the customer. So we'll integrate with their telematics device. We'll be able to show them all the reporting they need to do. They can download it on their own, or they can get it set up on a monthly push. So a lot around the back end to help them comply. On the regulation side, so regulation is both good and bad, right? It's a carrot and stick approach when you look at it. And it's been used over transportation for years. I mean, we were talking about it earlier. You look at the, you know, regeneration between, you know, DEF and, you know, the implementation of DEF with the SRG or the ERG technology. That was a regulation that was pushed to get to an emission standard that wasn't essentially a clean air regulation. So when the federal government was pushing that PPE standard down on those vehicles, the OEMs had to then push the technology to get to that standard. And then the operators had to deal with, you know, basically a DPF filter and a new liquid in their truck that never existed, you know, in the 100 years of trucking. So I think steps like that, you know, we help customers be able to deal with those speed bumps if they're in one of those areas that has regulation that's going to affect their business. And I think that's really what they're looking to is, you know, who can help me make the right decisions and to comply with this and comply easier. Because really, sometimes the people that have to comply aren't the ones with the trucks either. They're the ones with the warehouse, and they're trying to be able to provide an energy source for the transportation providers to come in to use that to then hit that standard. So we can help on that side too.
What is the regulatory environment for the charging side? We've all heard all the talk about the infrastructure bill and the charging that's going in there. So how associated is this with government regulation, government funding, government land, all of those kind of things?
Yeah, I think when you look at it on the fleet side, it's not what you see on the consumer charging, like retail charging. You know, on as far as grants and incentives, it's mostly at the state agency right now for what you'd call transportation grants for trucks, everything but a car. So when you look at it, we work mostly with the local utilities on programs they have to be able to bring energy to the curb, you know, make ready, be able to bring energy to the curb. We work with the local utilities, and they have tons of programs available, the utilities do, on the fleet side. So of course we expect on, you know, on bus, there's going to be grants and incentives, municipal and school bus. Those are at the federal level. They roll down to the state level. There's lots of that going on, and we'll help customers be able to comply with that, you know, apply for that, and then be able to deploy those resources to have charging and infrastructure to support school bus, municipal bus, and other things. But certainly a fleet is a little bit different than the rest of the grant and incentive structure, like you're seeing around highway. And then what you're seeing around, you know, some residential charging right now, you know, the utilities do a nice job, you know, supporting those programs in a bunch of states across the U.S. But it, yeah, a lot is going to change depending on the level of the infrastructure bill and what's going to come in that. We think on the fleet side, it's going to be more tax-based credit to be able to offset the cost of doing that. Because it's in transportation, the trucks need to stand on their own. Infrastructure is nice on an incentive or a tax-based standpoint because you're paying for something that's going to last for a really long time. On the vehicle side, if the vehicles don't stand up on their own from a financial standpoint, from a purchase price, you know, an operation and a TCO, that's a full industry problem. To get ready and have fueling available to support those vehicles, incentivizing fueling makes sense because that's hard dollars that are going on the ground at a business. And they're stuck with that. They either have to capitalize that, you know, against their building if they own it, or they're taking it as an operating expense. So it's a big cost to a business to be able to stand up EV charging at full deployment. Early right now, where we are in the pilot, this is not a lot of money to deploy EV charging to run a couple of vehicles on a pilot. You know, we design for now and we design for scale with these customers. So we can show them, what do you need now to accomplish what you want? And then when we got the concrete cracked open, let's build underground for what you might need in the future. And that's really how you future-proof that. Whether we break, you know, we work with one of our APCs and we break 50 feet of concrete or 200, it doesn't matter. That there's not that much more cost. So putting some pipe in the ground is not more expensive. Really, it's having to come back and do it again, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now gets really expensive. So we help kind of guide the businesses on what's the right way to think about this when they're starting in the journey.
Let's talk about that. Guiding businesses, strategic partnerships, how important are they to ChargePoint?
They're really important. So when you look at it, you know, besides the regulatory environment, so strategic partnerships are really important for us. So I'm sitting in the WEX building right now in Nashville, and WEX is a strategic partner of ours. They're one of the biggest fuel card providers in North America. They have an over the road an OTR division that does a lot of Class 8 fueling, and then they also have a big fleet card. So when you look at not making things difficult for the transportation manager, integrating WEX into our solution is a huge first step because they fuel an electric vehicle like they are going to fuel a diesel vehicle. The same card, the same reporting, the same integration in their back end. Everything is going to work just like it does on diesel. And it's those things that we look to partner with to make it easy for those customers to be able to transition to EV. Those are the things that are really important that you know, integrating with a telematics device. So, you know, the biggest error in EV fueling on the fleet side is the driver comes back, you know, he or she is tired or they got to run to the restroom or they're starving. They pull up to the charging station. They forget to plug it in. That's the single biggest fault code that there is in the industry right now. And it's a human one, right? So we need to be able to tell that transportation manager, hey, that vehicle is near the charger, but it's not plugged in because then it's not ready for the next morning to go out. So really simple things that we do to help customers be able to run their business effectively. Because in a diesel situation, that vehicle, the driver would probably be a little upset. They forgot to fuel it, but they'd get their coffee, they'd get in their truck, they'd fuel it, and they'd go do their route. In EV, you can't do that.
Well, I was going to say, you said something super important there because this is relatively new. A lot of drivers will be driving their first EV. It could be their truck. They're not used to this kind of experience. So how does, because you mentioned the software, you mentioned the equipment, how does EV charging work? At least from the truck driver's perspective, how does it work?
So right now, I'd say 90% of the, you know, you'd say there's two pieces of fleet fueling right now. In the early days on the smaller vehicles, class one and two, significant portion of take home fleets. So when you think about, this is really interesting. So when you think about the, you know, our whole adult life, there's really only been one place to get fuel, and that's on the road. So when you look at a new world with EV fueling now, look at all the places that you're standing up for fueling. So and a typical fleet customer right now in early days, a ton of them are fueling at home where we're putting a charger in their home, a ChargePoint charger, and they're charging that vehicle when they get home every single night. So every single home now has the opportunity to become a fueling station for their vehicle. That you know, you wouldn't have been able to wrap your arms around that 15 years ago. And we'll help that company do reimbursement of that employee's energy at home. So they charge X amount of kilowatts per night. We set a rate for the reimbursement and they get a reimbursement from their company every month or every other week or whatever they set their schedule. So first, you know, on some small fleets, it starts at home. And then it goes to a depot where they're fueling, you know, at a workplace or behind the fence of a workplace. And then they're fueling en route. So typically the smaller vehicles, class one and two, they're going to use all three of those. When you move to the heavier vehicles that are either charging at a higher rate, bigger batteries, longer dwell time, typically you're not charging those at home because, you know, it's going to take 20 hours to charge a vehicle that has a, you know, a battery size that big. So then they do a combination of workplace, depot, and on route where they're supplementing, you know, maybe they're charging out route. But the problem with on route right now is it's mostly for automobiles. So they have to be able to find a big enough parking lot to back that truck in. They need to have a cable that actually reaches, a charging cord it reaches. So what we're seeing is most of it is, you know, return to base every single day. They're only relying on their depot fueling that's set up at their building to be able to charge their vehicles. And it's really interesting. Like when you take fleet aside for a second and you look at all the places there are to fuel along a journey. So you and I, we have an EV and you look at all the places now we have the fuel and all the different fueling options there are. So you have home, which is logical. We're going to be there most. And then you're going to go to work and you're going to at some point expect some type of fueling access at work. So AC fueling where you can plug your car in and work for the day. But then you have, you know, kind of play and dine, right? So where do we go, you know, with our families? Where do we go with our friends? Are we going to expect that there's going to be some type of charging there? Not necessarily high power, but some type of fueling. And then you got kind of running around errands and fast food charging, right? So you're running some errands at the mall or at, you know, some type of place, you know, outdoor area, you're going to expect some type of charging. And then you kind of have your en route charging where you're doing a local trip and then you have fast charging. So you can imagine all the fueling places now have opened up that weren't there before. So I drove up, I have a EV. I drove up very early this morning from Atlanta and it's cold. It's 21 degrees, I think, when I left. And I fueled twice. Now I had probably plenty of battery to get here, you know, without stopping. But there was two charging stations that I'm familiar with on the way up, stopped and I grabbed a coffee on the first one, stopped and took a conference call on the second one, and I was in the office in 3 hours. So, you know, you kind of get into that routine. And I don't think you see that on the fleet side over a long period of time because the vehicles are going to be too heavy and the power is going to be too much. And you'll see commercial fueling locations like you do on the traditional side, like Flying J and TA and all the typical truck stops. You'll start to see that'll accommodate bigger vehicles.
So you know how you can put cell phones on certain surfaces and they'll get charged? Will that ever happen with cars where I just pull into a parking lot and my car just starts charging?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll see inductive. We've certainly played with it and there's a couple cool use cases out there right now, especially on the transit side. So yeah, you'll definitely see those technologies, especially in autonomous yard tractors. You know, there's no one to plug that vehicle in. You're going to see inductive over time or pin technology where there's an automated pin that automatically docks with the tractor when it comes and sits on the plate.
What advice would you give to students who are looking to get into this exciting field of EV charging?
So there's a couple ways. So first off, ChargePoint has a ton of interns that we bring in the summer. And there's plenty of those positions available. But also, you know, like my previous company I was at, you know, we had a manager trainee program where, you know, kids came right out of college and they started work on the rental counter. And then they learn the business and kind of grow up in the business. It's not a lot different here. So we have 1,300 employees globally right now. And in the US, we have tons of opportunity for junior account executives to come in and learn this business. And we're really dealing with customers that are a ton of fun to work with and deploy with and learn from. And you couldn't find a better work environment over here. And the whole industry is changing so fast. You really have the opportunity to get in on the ground floor and learn this business, you know, right from the beginning. We're in the first inning of the first game of a really long season. So there's no better time to get in than now.
If listeners like what they heard and they want to work with you, they want to work for you, where should I get them plugged into?
Go to chargepoint.com and click on residential, home, fleet, and it'll bring you all to the right place. And if you want a job, we got a career section and we got plenty of positions open right now all across the world. So if you want to leave the US for a couple of years and go play overseas, we'd love to have you on the team.
Anything else you'd like to say before we let you go?
No, thanks, Tim. It was a great afternoon. It was great to meet you.
Well, thank you for letting us inside your world today. This is an exciting and electric topic, pardon the pun. Hey, if you want to connect with me, you can find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. If you like this show, you can listen to it on audio. Just look up FreightWaves Insiders wherever you get your podcasts. Or look up FreightCast to get a full trailer load of Freight podcasts. That's right, every single FreightWaves show, all on one convenient feed. Or download the FreightWaves TV app. You can watch all this stuff and all of our other programs in HD. Take care, God bless, and we'll catch you next time.
Step inside the tribe as our market experts share their boots on the ground experience from the front lines of freight tech's emergence. I'm Tim Dooner, and this is Freight Waves Insiders.